Hello and welcome to the Veterinary Secrets Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Jones and this is episode 22. In today's episode, I'm going to talk to you about pet medicine safety, in particular, a drug for heartworm called Trifexis, and why you should be very cautious in ever giving it to your pets. Question and answers about laser therapy for animals. Lastly, I'm going to discuss how to crate train your dog. Now Veterinary Secrets is on iTunes. You can go to iTunes and search for Veterinary Secrets. We're also on Stitcher. You can download the Stitcher app and search for Veterinary Secrets or go to stitcher.com/podcast/veterinary-secrets. I would definitely appreciate it if you would subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. You can do so on iTunes or Stitcher. Questions or comments, feel free to post a comment on my blog at veterinarysecrets.com/blog, or you can send me an email. That's at podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. Let's get right into today's podcast. Pet medicines. Just how safe are they? There's a recent article that was published in the Indianapolis Star, which questioned the safety of certain veterinary medications, along with the relationships of veterinarians, pharmaceutical companies, and their ethics. The drug in question is called Trifexis. I have written about it in the past, but never discussed it on the podcast. Here's a little bit about the article. Some pets, Harry, Sesame, Ramsey, Colby, Rocky, and Peaches, they have something all in common. All of these beloved pets were prescribed a new chewable flea and heartworm medication, and they're now all dead. Their owners wonder if the drug, which is known as Trifexis, was the cause. Several things about this drug make them suspicious. Trifexis, like many other new pet drugs, was not specifically developed as an internal medicine for dogs. One of its two active ingredients started out as a crop pesticide. Trifexis, which was developed by Eli Lilly and company's animal drug division, Elanco, based in Greenfield, has reported many side effects. An Indianapolis Star investigation found that one of the two active ingredients, spinosad, ranks third amongst all pet drug ingredients for reports of convulsions, fourth for blindness, sixth for aggression and paralysis, and seventh for reports of unconsciousness, according to the latest data available from the U.S. FDA. The other active ingredient, nolbamycin oxime, ranks fifth for convulsions and ninth for deaths. Dog owners across the country have reported more than 700 deaths to the FDA since the drug hit the market in 2011, and the FDA estimates that for every side effect that's reported, 9 times as many go unreported. Trifexis is far from the only pet drug with hundreds of side effects and deaths reported. The database includes more than 19,000 dog and cat deaths reported in connection with a wide variety of pet medicines. But did Trifexis kill Peaches, Ramsey, Rocky? What is the risk of it? Or of other pet medicines killing your dog or cat? To such questions, pet owners can simply not get an independent answer. Not from veterinarians, not from the FDA, whose job it is to ensure drug safety. The companies insist their drugs are safe. In a prepared statement, Elanco told the Indianapolis Star, "It's critically important to understand that reports are not an indication of cause. For any given adverse drug event report, there is no certainty that the reported drug caused the adverse event." The article then goes on to explore the fuzzy relationships of drugs, veterinarians, and money. Then there was a response from DVM360, that's the veterinary site, and what they said. "Veterinarians and veterinary organizations have criticized the Indianapolis Star for its recent report, Pets at Risk, a series that criticizes veterinarians' relationships with drug manufacturers and implies that financial motivations often influence practitioners' decision more than pets and pet owners' best interests." AVMA President Ted Cohn wrote a letter to the newspaper's editor. This is what he said. "While you tried to paint a picture of veterinarians being beholden to pharmaceutical companies for monetary gain, you failed to cite even one specific case of impropriety or lack of professionalism. The same can be said for your suggestions that the AVMA annual convention revealed just one of the many ways corporate money influences pet health care, threatening the objectivity of those prescribing drugs to your dog or cat. What are some of my thoughts? Well, first, don't give your dog Trifexis or give your cat Comfortis. That also has spinosad in it. I have a blogger article on this, and after the podcast, you can go ahead and search it using the term Trifexis, and that'll come up. And my blog is theinternetpetvet.com. Number two, in every other profession that involves prescribing drugs, professionals admit to having clouded judgments around financial motivation and prescribing or not prescribing the drug. Most governing bodies are aware of this, and the public is growing increasingly skeptical. Except veterinarians, what do you think? Many veterinarians are struggling financially, and if anything, this more than clouds your ethics. My suggestion is just question it all. Question myself, Dr. Jones, question the drug companies, and question your veterinarian. Ultimately, it's up to you to make your own informed decision. Laser therapy. Question and answers. I had a listener send me an email, had some questions around laser therapy. Should they get it for their animal? Is it beneficial or not? So I'm just going to give you a number of just some Q and A's on it. Is laser therapy new? The beneficial effects of laser light on tissue were first recognized almost 40 years ago. Since then, there have been thousands of studies documenting the positive effects of laser light on different types of cells, tissues, and disorders. Recent advances in technology and manufacturing have made this exciting possibility available for clinicians. How long does the treatment take? Treatment protocols are unique to each patient and condition. Therefore, obviously, the treatment times will vary in complexity and cost. For some chronic patients, multiple joints can be treated during one laser treatment session. What can be treated with laser therapy? If your pet is feeling pain, has inflammation or a wound, the laser is a sterile, pain-free, surgical-free, drug-free treatment. The laser is used to treat a variety of injuries, wounds, fractures, neurological conditions, numerous skin problems, and pain. Whether your pet is rehabilitating from trauma or injury, healing from wounds, or simply aging, that laser has been shown to provide relief and speed healing. So what's involved with treating my pet? The laser light is delivered through a non-invasive handpiece to the affected area. Your pet will feel a gentle and soothing warmth. As the laser is administered, many pets will relax, much like you would when you're experiencing a good massage. There is almost immediate pain relief, and that's going to allow your pet to feel comfortable and decrease any anxiety they may have had or started out with. So how does it work? The laser therapy sends things called photons or packets of light energy deep into tissue without damaging it. These photons are absorbed within what's inside the cell called a mitochondria, part of the cell body, and they induce a chemical change called photobiomodulation. This light energy then inspires the production of ATP, that's the energy formation within the cell. ATP is the fuel or energy cells need for repair and rejuvenation. Impaired or injured cells do not make this fuel at an optimal rate. Increased ATP production leads to healthier cells, healthier tissue, and healthier animals. There are no known side effects. What can you expect to see at home? You might see a change in activity when your pet comes home. For some, it might be increased activity, and others, they may be more relaxed. This is due to the pain relief and reduction in inflammation. And how should you support this treatment at home? There's no specific things you need to do at home other than just follow the normal instructions that have been given by your veterinarian. What to expect during a laser treatment? Simply put, it's just providing relief. Unfortunately, your pet's fur doesn't need to be clipped. Eye protection will be worn by the laser operator and anyone in close proximity to the laser probe. The eyes of your pet will be directed away from the treatment or covered with a towel. What will my pet feel as a laser administered? As I said earlier, often many pets will just relax and enjoy it. Is there anything my pet should or shouldn't do while on the treatment? No, there's nothing in particular, just follow normal treatment protocols. And when can I expect to see an improvement? What might I see? So for many clients, they're actually seeing relief within the first treatment, as in pain and decreasing in pain and inflammation, better mobility. Such as, a dog having arthritis within their knee. They might see the drying and ultimate healing of especially these chronic wounds on the skin. Faster healing for wounds and incisions, or just your pet seeming more relaxed and comfortable. For some conditions, a series of treatments may be necessary, especially when you've got these sort of chronic ongoing arthritic conditions. For each pet, and the big point is for each pet, you want to assess them, their response to treatment, and ultimately it's up to you and your veterinarian making that decision, should you continue or not. My experience, though, with clients in the past and the clients that have gone through laser therapy has been very positive. It's great in terms of being non-invasive. Really seems to help for majority of especially our dogs that get these chronic arthritis. How to crate train, and this is the last section of today's podcast. I had a listener send in an email. The question was, should I crate train my dog? It's been instructed to. I've got a puppy. Should you or shouldn't you? My personal opinion is yes, I have crate trained all my puppies. I want you to think about it from the point of view of your dog's natural instinct. You know, crate training uses a dog's natural instincts as a den animal. A wild dog's den is his home, a place to sleep, hide from danger, raise a family. You know, the crate becomes your dog's den, an ideal spot to snooze or take refuge. The big point is the primary use for a crate is house training. Dogs do not like to soil their dens. The crate can limit access to the rest of the house while he learns other rules, like not to chew on furniture. And crates are really a safe way to transport your dog in the car. Some words of caution, it's not a magical solution. Never use it as punishment, and your dog is going to come to fear it and refuse to enter it. Don't leave your dog in the crate too long, especially these young puppies. A dog that's crated day and night, they don't get enough exercise, human interaction. They can become depressed or anxious. You may have to change your schedule, hire a pet sitter or something. Someone needs to get in there to let your dog out. Especially these young puppies under 6 months of age, they definitely shouldn't be staying in a crate any longer than 3 hours max at a time. Then they need to get out. They can't control their bladders and bowels that long. The same thing goes for adult dogs that are being house trained. You want to slowly make it a positive experience, slowly introduce them to it. Crate your dog only until you can trust them, you know, not to destroy your house. After that, it should be a place that they go voluntarily. So you're using it initially in terms of us training, and then after they've got that training down, then it's like you leave it open. And what I found with the majority of clients, I mean, they would leave that crate open, and that's where their dog would go. You feed him in there, you make it a positive experience, and that's where he chooses to go. Selecting a crate, your dog's crate should be just large enough for him to stand up and turn around. If your dog is still growing, choose a crate size that will accommodate his adult size. The crate training process. So let's go through the steps and what you need to know. Crate training can take days or weeks, depending on your dog's age, temperament, and past experiences. You have to keep a couple of things in mind. The crate should always be associated with something pleasant. Training should take place in a series of small steps. You don't want to go too fast. Step one, just want to introduce the crate to him. You know, make it in a positive spot, the middle of the living room, where everybody hangs out, where the family is. Let him sniff it. Bring it over to him. He's like, oh, look at that. In a big, happy tone of voice. He's like, okay. Maybe toss some food into it. Don't force him into it. You're wanting him to go in it on his own. So it's like, I get it. It's kind of a fun thing. Step two, feeding your dog his meals in his crate. First, you've introduced it to him. And the next thing is like, we're going to put his food in there. So if your dog is readily entering the crate when you begin step two, you know, you want to place the food dish all the way at the back of the crate. If he remains reluctant to enter the crate, put the food dish only as far as he's ready to go in without becoming fearful or anxious. Gradually, you're going to put that food bowl further back and back. If he begins to whine to be let out, you may have increased the length of time that he's been there too quickly. Next time, just try leaving him in the crate for just a shorter period of time. If he does whine or cry in the crate, don't let him out until he stops. Otherwise, he's going to learn that the way to get out of the crate is to whine, so he's just going to keep on doing it. So step three, lengthening the crating periods. After your dog is eating his regular meals in the crate with no sign of fear and anxiety, you can confine him there for short periods while you're home. But the big point is you want to be there. First, call him over to his tray, give him a treat, give him a command to enter, such as kennel, for instance. After your dog enters the crate, praise him, give him the treat, close the door. Sit quietly near the crate for 5 to 10 minutes, then go into another room for a few minutes. Return, sit quietly again for a short time, and then let him out of the crate. Repeat this process several times a day, gradually increasing the length of time you leave him in the crate and the length of time you're out of his sight. Once your dog will stay quietly in the crate for about 30 minutes with you, mostly out of sight, you can begin leaving him crated when you're gone for short periods of time, and or letting him sleep there at night. This may take several days or several weeks. Step four is then crating your dog when you leave. You don't want to start this until after he can spend about 30 minutes in the crate without becoming anxious or afraid. Then you can start leaving him for short periods while you're awake. So you're putting him in the crate using a regular command and treat. Vary at what point in your getting ready to leave routine you put your dog in the crate. Though he shouldn't be crated for a long time before you leave, you can crate him anywhere from, you know, 5 to 10 minutes before leaving. And just don't make your departures emotional and prolonged. Just matter of fact, see ya, I'm going. When you return home, don't reward your dog for excited behavior by responding to him in an excited, enthusiastic way. You want to keep your arrivals low-key to avoid increasing anxiety over when you're going to return. You don't want to promote separation anxiety in your dog. Continue to crate your dog for short periods from time to time in your home so he doesn't automatically associate crating with being left alone. We want to make it a positive experience. It's like, great, I'm happy to be here. I can hang out here. It's safe. Step four is whether or not you're going to consider crating your dog or night or not, and that's, you know, different. I've never had to do that. I started out with last puppy when I had Hoochie. He really liked to chew on shoes. He spent a couple nights in the crate. Beyond that, it was a very short period of time, and he was out of that. His big thing was knowing I was nearby. But for the most part, some clients will consider that. Wanted to discuss a few potential problems. One, if your dog whines or cries while in the crate at night, it may be difficult to decide whether he's whining to be let out of the crate or whether he needs to be let outside to go to the bathroom. But the big point is when you've gone through the initial steps, you've started out by making a positive experience, you've fed him in the crate, you know he can be in there for 30 minutes while you're home and he doesn't whine. If you've done those initial steps, then you know when he is whining, he needs to go out and go to the bathroom. So you let him out, right? It's a big positive thing. But if he's just whining to get out and he's in there for 3 minutes, he whines, you let him out, pretty soon he's going to associate the whining with getting out. So that's why you need to do this sequentially, starting with those first steps. Second point on separation anxiety, attempting to use the crate as a remedy for separation anxiety definitely won't solve the problem. Yes, the crate may prevent your dog from being destructive, but he may injure himself in an attempt to escape from his crate. Separation anxiety can only be resolved with counter-conditioning and desensitization procedures. And in that case, if you've got a dog with separation anxiety, you should be talking to a behavioral specialist. So that comes up to the end of today's podcast. Thank you for listening. I hope you've got some good information out of it. First of all, a bit of information on what potential conventional drug not to give your dogs, in particular Trifexis or Comfortis to your cats. Two, a little bit of information about laser therapy if you're considering using it. Really, really like it as far as an alternative option as far as treatment that more and more veterinarians are having access to. And lastly, a little bit of information on crate training, whether or not you're considering it for your dog and then how to do it correctly. So once again, thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Andrew Jones. Any questions or comments, feel free to post a comment on my blog at veterinarysecrets.com/blog or send me an email that's at podcast@veterinarysecrets.com.